Good morning, everyone. Do shadows lurk in your life, perhaps in the form of discouragement, frustration, debt, fear, abuse, heartbreak, addiction, or loneliness? This hour, I invite you to leave the darkness and step into the light. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. My guest today is Glenn Haggerty, a lay minister, an award-winning author of young adult novels, and a man who encountered an obstacle in his path that turned his life in a new direction. Are you struggling with an unexpected circumstance in your life? Do you feel God leading you into uncharted territory? Grab a cup of coffee, settle into your favorite resting spot, and we'll return in 1 minute when Glenn will join us on the show and share the changes God brought about in his life.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold.
You're listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen.
Who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes his own.
This is the show where Christians share their walk from darkness down a sometimes long and lonely path to the light of healing and fulfillment through faith.
Seek out the hopeless, confused and torn, and hold out your candle for all to see. Take your candle and go light your world.
Right here on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio. My guest today, Glenn Haggerty, worked as an independent insurance agent for 20 years, but from childhood he was always fascinated with a good story. Complications of glaucoma forced him out of the business world, and after a year of adaptive training, he entered Bethel Seminary and graduated magna cum laude with a Master of Divinity degree in 2005. Now he combines his love for teaching God's Word with his passion for writing exciting fiction. Here to share his life journey and how God navigated him through it is lay minister and author Glenn Haggerty. Good morning, Glenn, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Patty. I appreciate you asking me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's always fun to do a show, and I love to talk to people who write because I'm somewhat of a writer myself. I'm kind of in the process of trying to get a couple of novels out there. So I always love talking to writers, and I love talking to people who are involved in ministry of different types as well. So why don't you tell us about yourself, Glenn?
Well, I spent about 20 years in the insurance business. I was a property and casualty agent, and then as a result of glaucoma and complications of that, I became disabled about 20 years ago. And from that point, my life was kind of turned upside down, and I began to, things began to change, and God did wonderful things. But I had six young children at the time, still have my six children, and my wonderful wife. And since that time, I now have six grandchildren added to the mix, and I live in Waconia, Minnesota, with two of my oldest, my two youngest children are still in the home, but getting ready to graduate pretty soon, and so soon we'll be looking at an empty nest situation as well.
Oh my goodness, and that's a tough time for parents sometimes, especially when you've had as many children in the home as you have over a span of several years, Glenn.
Yes, it'll be different.
Well, I wish you the very best with that. We have two children who, of course, are now adults, and they were only 19 months apart, so they kind of both left the nest within a fairly short period of time, although our daughter is still here in town, so she didn't wander too far away. She was the one that was always going to leave this small town and go live in some big city, and here she is still here. Our son, on the other hand, who absolutely loved our little town, now lives in the United Kingdom. So,
oh boy,
go figure. You just never know what kids are going to do.
That's so true.
it's just kind of amazing when you look back and think about it. Glenn, what factors do you believe in your upbringing inspired you to go to seminary?
Well, my father claims that he was studying to go to the priesthood until he met my mother. So
aha.
I don't know if there's some family background there, but we were a fairly religious family growing up. And but it was really in my early adulthood that I was radically saved, and that I was, you know, all in for Jesus, and I wanted to serve him in any way that I could. At that time, I was already in business and felt led to continue to pursue that vocation. But at the same time, I became very involved in the local church, and this might date me a little bit, but I spent 11 years as a teacher and training in evangelism explosion during those years. And so I always had a heart for ministry. So that's, I think that had an impact when the opportunity came to my life, into my life to do that, mm-hmm. You know, that I took it.
Yeah, definitely. Now, is Bethel Seminary, obviously it must be fairly near where you live then?
Yes, Bethel Seminary is in St. Paul, just a bit north of St. Paul. And at the time, it was about an hour drive, but they had an in-ministry program. So I did some of my work online, and I did much of my work in blocks where you would come in for a week and every day, and it'd be a, you know, 8-hour day. So it was an interesting delivery system that they had, and it worked for me. I was able to get there for those week-long blocks, and then it was nice also to have the times off where I was doing work online. But it's an excellent program. I'm very blessed to have been able to attend.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and you know, the whole online education venue has changed things so very much. When I went to nursing school back in New York where I grew up, and then I moved out here to Colorado to a little tiny town, not in the mountains. I'm out on the plains. And decided I wanted to get a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing. And my chief nurse at the time, just when I told her that, she just kind of looked at me and said, okay, you came out here from the education capital of the country, which is New York City, to get a degree? Explain that, you know? And I ended up doing an awful lot of traveling. I went to school in Pueblo, and it was an hour and a half away from here. And I had to change my whole work schedule so I could work from 6 to 2:30 to go to evening classes at 5. And, you know, there was an awful lot to it. And that was long before the whole online opportunity was there. So, yeah, it's made a whole world of difference for folks. And I commend you for doing that, Glenn. What facet of ministry are you involved in now? I know you said that you're not really a pastor per se. So tell us what aspects of ministry you are involved in at this point, Glenn?
Well, I serve on the what we call the sermon team at Freshwater Community Church, and there I help develop and critique the weekly sermons. There's four of us that do that, and I also am the primary person that writes up our weekly sermon-based Bible study questions, which our small group then go on and use. And in addition to that, something I've done over the years is mentor men in a one-to-one discipling ministry, and I still like to do that as the opportunity presents itself.
And I imagine the way you're speaking, you probably are a member of a very large church, I would want to guess.
It's large. It's in the large category, but it's not a mega church. We have about a 1,000 or in that range, a little more maybe, that attends every week. There's two campuses, but it's pretty lean in terms of a lot of volunteers do a lot of the work, and mm-hmm. Very neat group of people in all levels of the ministry there. So we're really excited about it and very blessed to be part of it.
Well, see, when you look at me who attends a church that has a average weekly attendance of 30 to 50 people,
ooh.
You know, I mean, to me, you are, I have always been a member of smaller churches because I've always lived in smaller areas, even though when I said I came from New York, I didn't come from New York City. I came from Long Island, fairly small town out there. And we had a little more membership and attendance than what we have out here. But still, I have never really attended on a regular basis a church where there's like 500 to 1,000 people. And I cannot imagine what that would be like on a weekly basis for folks. It must be a very different experience.
Well, yeah, I was just going to draw the comparison. You just have to try to – it takes a little more effort to get connected, I think, in a bigger church sometimes. And – I think you have to be a little more proactive to seek out people and make those friendships, because there's so many people there that you can't know everybody.
Right. Well, we're a very close-knit group, but on the other hand, when you have events and things that need to be done, you have only a certain number of people that can participate in getting all that done. Well, because for us, several of our congregation members are older. I mean, like considerably older, and there are certain things they just can't do anymore, you know, so it makes it a little bit tough as far as trying to get things done. Right now we have a big, quote unquote, big event coming up in our town. It's called Santa Fe Trail Day. It's the longest running event sponsored by a high school in the country, I believe. We're celebrating like our 83rd year this year, and we're doing a float for our church in the parade, and we haven't done that in years. And, you know, it was a lot of fun, but it just seems like there's only a certain group of people that can get together and do these things. So that makes it tough. But anyway, Glenn, I want to talk more about you. What inspired your interest in writing middle grade young adult work? I'm sure you're raising your young children had something to do with that.
Yes, I think the early teens are a rough period of life to traverse, and especially today. And for some reason, I have a good memory, and I remember my own struggles during those years. And for me, I wasn't really following Christ at the time, and so I've also observed that struggle, the struggles of those years in others, including my own children. So I write inspirational fiction to give kids hope that they too can make it through that period of time with God's help. So that's what motivates me and inspires me.
And did you have an interest in writing from the time you were a young person, Glenn, or is this something that you developed as you got older?
I think it developed over time. I began to love reading, and I still remember the first book that really turned my head. I was in sixth grade at the time, and it was Jack London's Call of the Wild. I was in the library.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody put the book in my hand. I read it, and that developed a love for reading. But and I think writing, just reading a lot like that, it stimulated me to my imagination, and I would find myself, you know, thinking of alternate stories. And when I became disabled, I think, you know, one of the things that helped me keep my sanity was to listen to books on tape from the Library of Congress. I could no longer read regularly, so I began listening. And that further, you know, kind of got me back into that imaginative mode. And I think that's probably the spark that pushed me into writing once I developed the rehabilitation, you know, the skills that I needed to do that. So it was as a middle-aged person, actually, that I started to write.
And that's, you know, that's been the story for a lot of the folks that I've had on the show, that they begin their writing later on in life. In fact, on my website, I do a blog where I have guest authors, and it's called The Over 50 Writer, because there's so many people out there that are like me, over 50, and really don't get into their writing career until later on in their life. We'll talk about your books in a minute, Glenn, but I do want to ask you if you would share with us, it must have been a very devastating blow for you to have had such a problem with your vision as you did. And I can relate to that because all of my life I have had poor vision. I have just what I need to drive, 20/40, and one eye with correction. And my mom was born legally blind. So both my mom and I have had that experience of low vision. Tell us what that was like for someone like you who had had good vision for most of your life and to suddenly discover that you weren't going to have that anymore.
Well, it was very difficult and, a dark period literally of my life. I think that that there was a period about 6 months before I had this glaucoma surgery when, it built up over time my vision kept getting worse. And, I really was looking at blindness at about age 39, rather in a short period of time. But I went to Bascom Palmer Eye Institute. They had another procedure at the time. And that really ultimately saved my vision, but it immediately put me into a situation where I couldn't use my vision very well. I had loss of functionality, really, is what happened, and then a chronic pain that came in with that. So I couldn't do the things that I used to do anymore, things that I took for granted. I mean, even like going
sure.
for a walk was very difficult. And so I think that the thing that helped me get through that is that I tried not to ask God why and to focus on all the things that I had lost, or that rather to ask God, what do you want me to do, and where are you leading in this. And I began, some pretty amazing things happened. God provided for me in miraculous ways financially. I had six small children, and I ended up getting some really good rehabilitation, and I began to learn the adaptive techniques and eventually wound up back in a teaching and leadership ministry in the church. And so I think that focusing on God and not on the things that were lost, on things that you still have, and learning, being willing to learn new things really helped me.
So you were already involved in ministry before you started to lose your vision, Glenn?
Yes, I was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. And it was afterwards, if I understand correctly, that you went ahead and went to seminary. Do I have that right?
You do have that right. So
Oh, my goodness. And what a challenge that must have been.
It was. I managed to squeeze a 3-year degree into 6. But I did make it through, and it was a blessing. The rehabilitative services here in Minnesota helped me to do that. They helped me with the rehabilitation, just learning to use screen readers, the learning mobility, and that gave me the tools I needed to get through the coursework. And so it was challenging and yet stimulating in a good way, that it gave me, a focus and a goal.
Sure.
And it was a blessing.
And the adaptive tools that they have today, too. When my mom was young, she was able to get through grade school, I guess, okay. But when it came to high school, she just could not make it through there. So she ended up going to the New York Institute for the Education of the Blind in New York City. And I mean, I can't imagine this, but I guess they taught those kids how to navigate through the city in their blindness and how to use the subway system and all these things. And it's like, oh gee, I cannot imagine. I know like I say, my vision is limited. I have problems like with the computer. I always have to enhance everything, the websites and all that. I'm always having to enhance my screen, and that's a pain. But to actually have such low vision that you just can't see what's in front of you has got to be very difficult. I'm also wondering, Glenn, were you exposed to Braille at all? Did you learn Braille at all, or no?
I did. I don't use it at all, and I've forgotten it. But I actually became fairly proficient. I could read. It's very tough for an adult, I think, to really...
And a sighted person, yeah.
And a sighted person. So I didn't, you know, they taught it to me because I wasn't sure if I would, you know, would completely lose my sight, which I haven't.
Sure.
So I still, I'm not blind. And so anyway, if you don't use it, you kind of lose it. And so I...
Right.
But it was very interesting and enjoyable in many ways because you're using a different sense, you know, the sense of touch to get information into your brain. But yes, I did do for my in my rehabilitation. They blindfold you. They treat, if you have low vision, they force you to act like you have no vision because a lot of people in that situation are may eventually end up that way. And so they do. I did my training blindfolded with my mobility, and yes, they did the same thing with me. To pass my test, I was blindfolded and dropped off in a neighborhood somewhere and said, "Find your way home," you know, and with a cane.
Wow.
And then the same thing in the city. I had to get on a bus, you know, make these different bus transfers, and you know, and find my way back to Vision Loss Resources, which was the organization that did the training. So that was my final exam, if you will, for mobility training.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty scary, but also pretty liberating when you master it. And I was able to do that by God's grace. So.
No, yeah, and just like you said, what they used to do with Mom, I guess they would put some kind of little blinders in her eyes when she came back to school after the weekends because they didn't want her to have the advantage over any of the other students. And she became very proficient in Braille. In fact, she was a Braille transcriber for high school students. She would transcribe textbooks and the like. And goodness, my sister and I, we used to spend hours sitting at the kitchen table and we would read to Mom so that she could transcribe this work into Braille. And of course, you had to, every single capital letter, every single punctuation, you know, mark, you had to tell her what was there, just exactly the way it was written on the page so that she could transcribe it. And boy, we spent a lot of time doing that. She was one of only like 10,000 transcribers in the country at the time. And it was a big deal. She gave a lot of her time to that. So, yes, I have the highest admiration for people who adapt to a handicap, Glenn, and for you to go on and get a further education to me is amazing. And how do you handle doing your writing with your handicap?
Well, I use a screen reader called JAWS for Windows, and it basically speaks to you as your cursor or your mouse navigate around the screen. It tells you where you are and what's, you know, and their keystroke commands mostly that help you to execute different things that you're doing. So it's not, you can use the mouse. I do have a mouse and I use it. I make, like you probably, I make it super big and so I can see it, but I more use keystrokes that, you know, I touch type and use the keystrokes that command it to do different things, like to maybe select a copy paste and that sort of thing, insert and delete and all of that. So it's a little more time consuming. I'm not too good with punctuation. I miss a lot of that in my self edit. So I'm writing, I kind of depend on other people to look at some of that stuff. Capitalization is another one that, I mean, you can turn your screen reader up, if you will, so that it'll tell you every little detail, but then it gets too tedious, you know, sometimes.
Yes.
So you got to try to find, you know, a happy medium.
Exactly.
And that. So, but yeah, the screen readers today are very sophisticated and, I won't say they're easy to use. They do take a lot of, you know, work to master the techniques, but once you do, they're very effective.
Well, once again, it's got to be an exercise in frustration, and I commend you highly, Glenn, for pursuing this career as an author like you have. Before we talk about your books, I do want to make listeners aware. Some listeners come in the middle of a show, so I want to make them aware what they're listening to. We are listening to Step Into the Light. My guest today is Glenn Haggerty. Glenn is an award-winning author, and he also works in ministry. We've been talking a little bit about his ministry. We've also been talking about the fact that Glenn was diagnosed with glaucoma, which severely affected his sight. And we've talked a little bit about that and how he has adapted to that. I want to also make listeners aware of where they can find Glenn. He can be found at his website, which is Glenn, G-L-E-N-N, Haggerty, H-A-G-G-E-R-T-Y.com. He also has a website under the same name with the word author after it, and he is on Twitter. And I have a website also, which is Patty Sheehan, P-A-T-T-I-S-A-G-N-E.com. On that website, I have a Blog Talk Radio tab with a page entitled Social Media and Website Information. And on that page, you will find all the information I just gave you about Glenn, as well as all of our other guests. If you miss this show Tuesday morning, it is also archived, so you can go to my archive page on the website, and it will take you to this show. If you miss part of it and you want to listen again or whatever, and also all of our other shows are on archive there. So let's get back to Glenn. Glenn, the name of your first book, your debut novel, is Run. Tell us about it.
Well, Run is a story of a 13-year-old boy from a Christian home who's kind of trying to find his way. You know, he wants to be in with the in crowd, and that's caused him to make some bad choices, and those choices have kind of mushroomed into a big mess. His family relocates from a suburban area to a small town, and that gives him an opportunity to start over. But he's not a fast learner. So everything, he starts making some of the same mistakes, and things just go from bad to worse socially. And then he has a nasty run-in with some bad men. He still wants to do things his way, but he slowly begins to trust in God and through circumstances, he begins to change. And it's a good thing because he's going to need God's help to get through what's going to lie ahead and what develops into an intense action thriller.
Sounds exciting. And even though I'm not a 10 to 14-year-old boy, I bet I would enjoy the story. What gave you the idea for the novel, Glenn?
Well, I mentioned before, I often get my imagination, you know, roves, and I'll get an image in my head, a picture, maybe a scene. And in this case, it was an abandoned house that I remembered as a child when I used to run up and down the Appalachian foothills myself. And that kind of just spurred my imagination. They're always kind of creepy. They're always a little mysterious. You wonder who lived there, what went on there, and what's in there. You know, we go poking around inside these old houses sometimes. Your imagination kind of goes wild. And I remembered an image came into my mind about that house, and I begin to develop that in my think about it, and the image changed, of course, as my imagination went in a little different directions. And that that was kind of the germ for the story. And in the story, of course, there's an abandoned house, and it's not really what it appears to be. On the surface, it looks like a kind of a rundown old place, but it has an underground that's been modernized and a tunnel system and it's actually a hideout for some bad men. And the boys stumble on this place, and that kind of begins the story. There's a back and forth. They try to avoid it. They get sucked in again, it mushrooms into a very exciting and dangerous situation for them.
Sure. Oh, it sounds like it. What themes do you manifest in your novel?
Well, as I mentioned, I want to give kids hope, you know, that they can make it through. And I think a positive some of the positive themes are a sense of faith, you know, developing a, you know, a struggle. We all struggle to do it our way versus doing it God's way. And it just that step of faith to yield to God and say, okay, I want to do it your way. And then the courage to stand with that and maybe the courage to stand alone. So faith and courage are the two big ones. And there's also a theme of forgiveness, because there's that's one of the things that comes into play here that the protagonist doesn't want to do, but does eventually, and it makes such a huge difference. And then learning just to really, you know, take the focus off self and begin to care for others, like, you know, love your neighbor as yourself kind of care. And so those are the main themes of the story.
Is there any, since this is such a big issue, is there any mention or is there any situation where one or more of the characters are involved in bullying?
Yes, that is part of the social mess that it multiplies around Tyler, the protagonist. And yes, and particularly in this age group, I think bullying has always been a problem, probably still is, and there
always will be, probably.
Probably, I didn't want to say that. I hope for the best, but
hope
probably
not,
always
but
will be, and it comes in different forms now.
At some level,
and,
yeah.
Yes, it's kind of evolved. So yes, he has to deal with a bully, and so that's another big part of the story and how that plays out. You have to read the book to find out.
Yes. We don't want to give away too much. We just want to give enough to make people interested, huh?
Right.
So, Glenn, how do you manifest your faith in your stories to these young people without sounding too preachy? And that can be tricky.
For me, because during those years I was a rebel and I was not maybe the nicest person in the world, I can relate to kind of both sides of doing it the wrong way and doing it the right way. And so I relate to that flawed, to those character flaws. I relate to the issue, just rebellion against
right.
everything. And I put myself into that mindset and then play out God moving in those dark places and how he brings light and hope. And, God isn't preachy and he isn't boring. I remember in C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia, in the famous line about Aslan, the lion who represents Christ, one of the characters says he's not a tame lion. You know, he's not boring. He's not uninteresting. He does amazing things. And so I that's the way I see life, and that's the way I see this period of life. And so I hope that I avoid that preachy and kind of boring sound.
Mm-hmm.
I think I do.
Oh, I hope so, and I'm going to get a copy of your book and read it too, because you've really whetted my appetite now for the story. And I also know that this isn't just one book, Glenn. This is a series, correct?
It is. I have two more books that are completed. It's called the Intense Series, and here's a little description of it. It says, whether in his small town, in the wilderness, or in the tropics, on vacation, danger stalks 13-year-old Tyler Higgins like mosquitoes after exposed skin. And the prequel is Escape, which is the setting is in Florida, and then Run, the setting is in it's a fictitious setting in the Northeast. And then book two, Chase, is also in the Northeast. And then book three, book two, Chase, is finished. I just, it hasn't been published yet. Book three, Hyde, is going to go back to Florida, and it's going to be the third story. He's on vacation and has a run-in with some modern-day pirates, and it's based on the Spanish treasure fleet of 1715 that was ran into a hurricane and was wrecked. The wrecks were all strewn across the east coast of Florida, from the Florida Keys up to the Sebastian Inlet, and that's the setting and kind of the background, and it develops into a kind of modern day pirate who's looking to steal to get this treasure that doesn't belong to him and he has no right to. So that would be book three that is partially written. I've done the research on it, as you can see, and it'll have a same character, same protagonist, different characters. I stay with the same protagonist, but the secondary characters are still there, but the emphasis might change. One might become more prominent in one story and less in the next.
So. I'm interested to know why you would set your story in the Northeast when you're not from that area, or are you?
Well, I am. I was born
okay.
in the Northeast, so I was born in a small town in northern central Pennsylvania. And,
oh, okay.
So I'm familiar with that type of terrain. But we moved to South Florida as I was growing up, and so I graduated actually from high school in South Florida. And so I'm familiar with both very familiar with both settings and from that respect. And so I draw on those that knowledge for these books.
Okay, and see, that's my fault. I just assumed because you're in the central time zone that you were from there.
Well, that's another story. That's more of a romance story, because I met my wife was from. I was in Florida. She was down on vacation. I met her. I saw this pretty girl across the street. I went and introduced myself. Turned out she was from the Minneapolis area, and now I'm living in Minneapolis. Go figure.
Following your true love, huh?
Yes, yes.
That's a neat story. Well, Glenn, we briefly touched on the fact of bullying. Bullying is very much a prominent issue today for young people, sad as it is, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. So I'm going to ask you, as a parent and as an author who writes for young people, what kind of advice do you have for parents, especially parents who suspect that their child is a victim of bullying?
Well, this is a very heartbreaking situation for a parent, for sure. And I think the first thing I would say is to a parent is to be alert, because of fear of reprisal, kids are often reluctant to tell their parents, about a bullying situation. So you kind of have to be alert as a parent, especially during that age range that I'm dealing with. And, there are, anything like, depression, withdrawal, and, maybe a reluctance to go to school or mm-hmm. other places might indicate that something's going on. Of course, marks of violence, if your kid comes home with a bloody nose, you might want to talk about that, mm-hmm. anyway. But in those situations, like I said, to try to draw your children out, just to get them to talk and to trust you, to let them know that you're on their side. And I think sometimes tapping into our own experience, I think most people have experienced bullying on some level, if you can recall it, and maybe just begin to to offer your own experience and paint a picture of what it was like and then how it was resolved, and maybe ask your child if they've ever experienced anything like that. In my story, Run, it's Tyler's father kind of wheedles the truth out of Tyler when he sees him, hitting a punching bag. He says, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you hitting that punching
sure.
bag? And then he begins to, he gets it out of them, and he gives them some good godly advice and helps the child work his way through it. The results still aren't always ideal, and they weren't in the story. But anyway, I think that, what can you do as a parent, I think, is, you want to try to encourage your children to deal with the bullying situation, but you also want to preempt it by getting them connected to kids that are, you know, not going to bully them. Friendships are often a key issue here. Trying to be in a group or you know, stay connected or get connected, the two often go together. So I would encourage parents to get their children connected to other children through youth groups at church, other children's groups in your community, things that your children will have in common with other people. You know, get to know your child and what they like, what are their interests, and try to put them in situations where they can meet kids that are going to have similar interests, homeschool groups, athletics, music, drama, and other kinds of organizations for kids are a great place to do that. Mm-hmm. In my story, the parents immediately connected Tyler to a local church that had an active youth group, and that ultimately proved to be very helpful for him.
Very good. And another thing that I read about on your website, and I'm not sure if you address it in Run specifically, is the problem of children learning how to forgive their friends when things don't always go the way you expect they're going to go, whether it be a trust issue or a friend starts becoming close to another friend and there's jealousy there. How do you recommend that adults help kids resolve those issues, Glenn?
Well, first I should mention that there will be, I've just completed a companion Bible study to go with Run, and it's going to address pretty heavily the issue of forgiveness, pretty heavily of making friends, principles and for that, and also the issue of bullying will be in this Bible study. So it'll be on my website soon. I'm not sure exactly how soon, in the next couple of months, I'm hoping. And it will also be available from Amazon and other book providers. As far as that specific question, the issue of forgiveness, I think the most important thing for parents is to model forgiveness. You know, kids learn by what they see more than what they're told. And so
yes,
if you as a parent are struggling with this issue, you really should resolve it for the sake, not only your own sake, but for the sake of your children. And if you've struggled with it in the past, again, you can share that experience, you know, assuming it's appropriate, or you can make it appropriate in the details, you know, with your child. And I think that there are some key scriptures that address this issue. Colossians 3:13 says, "Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others." And so I think, you know, teaching them principles and kind of the details of why that works and how that works. And I think, you know, teaching them to pray for others, I think that's a huge big step in starting in the process of forgiveness. But also explaining the benefits of forgiving and the cost of not forgiving. In my story, Tyler, the protagonist, forgave another boy who offended him, and it went really far in creating a friendship in the long term and kind of repairing his friendships with some other people. So of course, connected to your relationships very, very closely. And the cost of not forgiving you oftentimes can result in isolation, which nobody wants to be there.
No, for sure. Well, it sounds like you have a lot of really substantial life lessons for young people in your books, Glenn, and they sound very exciting and compelling. So, and let me bring up for listeners, I assume that Run is available on Amazon at this point. Is that correct?
It is. It's available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble online as well. And
okay.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, it's not in the big bookstores, but you can order it online
mm-hmm.
pretty quickly.
And how soon do you expect the release of the next book in your series?
Well, I'm really wrestling with that right now. It's ready it's really, I think, just about ready to go. So I just have to work things out with the editor and get it in on the timeline. So I would expect at this point probably July of this year. To, I don't want to be realistic about it. I wish it would come out in June, but I don't think so. Looking for July.
Okay. And now, did you self-publish, or are you publishing through a traditional publisher, Glenn?
I'm publishing through Tagus Publishing, and that's it's a small independent publisher.
Okay. Oh, and, yes. Amy Dearden.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, she's a good friend of mine. Yes.
Well, good. Well, she's a great lady.
Yeah.
And
I've been unable to reach her lately via email. I guess I'll have to send her a message on her website and say, hey, get in touch with me, because I haven't heard from her in quite some time. Yes, that's right. I did see that you were with Amy's publishing company. That's correct. And tell us about your – I believe you also have a newsletter that's available to listeners and readers. Is that right?
I do. If you go to my website, and there's a little box there and it says Intents on it, and that's my newsletter. And if you sign up for that, I'll give you opportunities to get the scoop on when my books are coming out and what deals that are available, and also opportunities to help me out, because I rely on others to help me with, actually reading my book. I've had a number of my influencers who read the book and offer suggestions, and book cover we put out there for people to kind of vote on, and that's a lot of fun. Book covers are fun.
Oh yeah.
I don't put it out that often because I don't want to. I don't say any. I don't put it out there if I don't have anything to say. Basically,
exactly.
I don't just throw it out there for yik yak. So I want to give people something of substance, so it's not going to clog up your email box either.
There you go. All righty, Glenn. Well, I have really enjoyed talking to you, especially about what you have accomplished and what you have overcome in your writing and in pursuing ministry. And I want to wish you the very best with your vision issues. I hope that your vision either gets better or stays as it is, that it doesn't get any worse, because as my mom got older, she passed away recently, but as she got older, she dealt with some very severe issues, and it's difficult, but it sounds like you have, invoke God's help and accepted his help and overcome an awful lot. And once again, I want to commend you for that. And I want to thank you for spending time with us on the show today.
Well, thank you, Patty. And thank the listeners for tuning in. I just pray God's blessing on your ministry, Patty, and on everyone who's tuning in, that God will touch your heart today.
Well, thank you. And it's been a pure pleasure having you, Glenn. And I will, of course, I have a to-be-read stack here that's probably got 50 books in it, but one of these days I definitely would enjoy to read Run. And thank you again for sharing what you did with our listeners, and may God bless you and continue to bless your ministry and your writing. Thank you again, and goodbye.
Okay. Thanks, Patty.
Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. I welcome you back next week, May 3rd. Hope you join us then. In the meantime, have a blessed week.
There is a candle in every soul. Some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glare.